Hi, this is John Gabriel, and welcome to the Mind-Body Weight Loss Summit. This educational series is for those of you who have tried and failed with conventional diet and exercise programs. This is for people who are ready to take a holistic approach to wellness, a mind-body approach, to address the real reasons why your body's holding onto weight right now and reverse it forever. And today I'm thrilled to be joined by the creator of Pleasurable Weight Loss, Jenna LaFlemme. After a decade-long struggle with emotional overeating and low self-esteem, Jenna thought she'd hit rock bottom when she gained 20 pounds. Just as she began to think things couldn't get any worse, she heard her body telling her, "Listen to me." Once she started to tune into her body's voice, she adapted her food and lifestyle choices accordingly, and her excess weight fell away. Since then, Jenna has made a commitment to dedicate her life to helping other women get the body of their dreams in healthy, lasting, pleasurable, natural ways through her workshops, products, teleclasses, webinars, online community, and private coaching programs. Jenna has been featured in Glamour, Pilates Style, and on the Discovery Health Channel. She is also the founder of the Jenna Wellness Center in New York City, where she holds her private coaching and consultation sessions. To learn more about Jenna and her work, please visit her website, pleasurableweightloss.com. So, Jenna, how are you?
Fabulous. Happy to be here, John. Yeah. Thank you.
Excellent. So I'm just wondering, you know, maybe you could tell us a little bit about, you know, this pivotal moment you had that resulted in you finally being able to hear your inner voice.
Yes, I will. Well, the background was that from about the age of 14, I started binging. At times I would purge in addition. And I was in this inner turmoil with food, John, that you well know, where it was my best friend and my worst enemy. And I really thought it would be a life sentence, that some people have a heroin addiction for life, others have a gambling addiction. I thought this would be my cross to bear, my compulsion with food. Time went on, and I really knew I needed to get to the bottom of it because it was causing me so much suffering. And I tried this, and I tried that, and I tried everything. And one day I was at a movement class, and I was complaining, as my usual way, about my body, and I didn't know what to eat, and I ate too much. And my teacher said to me, "Well, that's just because you haven't been listening to her." And I was like, "Who?" He goes, "Her, your body, your animal." And I looked at him inquisitively. And he said, "Jenna, there's two of you. There's your mind and there's your body. And your body's an animal. She's a mammal. And Jenna, all animals in nature, they know what to eat. You wouldn't think of a monkey in the jungle that was confused about what to eat. It's natural. All animals in the wild know. And your body knows, too, if only you would listen to her. If only you would respect her." He said, "Jenna, what you need to start working on is your relationship with her. And because you haven't been listening, she stopped talking. But once you start listening, you're going to hear loud and clear that she knows." And, John, when he would say, "She, your body," it was as if these little ears perked up and said, "Oh, yes, me, thank you. You said my name. Finally, somebody recognizes me."
Yeah.
And I found myself magnetized to come back to this teacher again and again, and I would say, "Tell me about her." Because at the beginning, it was only when I was with him and he recognized her that I could recognize her. But eventually, I got the transmission and was able to realize that there's this living, breathing, decision-making, intelligent, wise part of me, the animal part, the alive part, that does know how to eat. And I started to learn to listen, and that's led me to where I am now, 10 years later, being a weight loss expert. And my particular approach is called pleasurable weight loss, and that's where it all began.
In what ways, once you started listening and tuning into your body, what changes started to happen as far as your diet and your lifestyle?
Well, one thing I found was that I thought what I wanted was to eat a box of cookies or to eat a whole pint of ice cream.
Yeah.
But when I started listening to her and intentionally using that personal pronoun for my body, and I recommend that to everyone listening, the correct way in English is to say, "I have a body, it is whatever it is." But I want you to play with the language to your own devices. And if you're a guy, think, "There's me and there's him." If you're a woman, "There's me and there's her."
You know, language can be very powerful. And that type of repositioning makes a lot of sense to me, because then you're giving it life. you're giving it a consciousness,
yes,
identity, life. It's,
yes,
like, it's not just a machine that you take a pill or you do some surgery to, or that you have to manage. It's a living, breathing, conscious being that's working with you. And I think, and I just did it to myself as I'm talking with you. And the second I did that, I felt the distinction, and I felt the life in there and the consciousness in there, and I felt that communication. So I think that's incredibly powerful. That makes a lot of sense to me.
And what happens, John, is that it shifts the paradigm away from possession. Because if I have a body, you know, I have a computer and I have a phone, and you know what?
Exactly.
My phone is a Kraken because I dropped it.
Right. And a computer, you know, a computer, when something, you know, when you need more computer chips, you get more computer chips, or when you need to fix a hard drive, you fix a hard drive. When you need to get a new computer, you get a new computer. It takes the life out of it. And I think that's what we do in so many different ways. We take dead food, and we take pills, and we live in closed, indoor environments, and there's just no, we take the life out of our life, out of our living, breathing, conscious being. And so I really feel, as I'm talking to you and as I'm saying it, you're giving life back to life is what it feels like. You're giving life back to your body.
Absolutely. So the reality is you don't own your body. If anything, your body owns you, because your body is your one access to life. Without her, without him, you'd be dead.
I'll take it a little further. You know, Eckhart Tolle says that the only part of you that's ever always in the present moment is your body. Your body is your most present part of you. And the rest of us, we're here, we're in the past, we're in the future, we're making up stories, we're worrying about this or that. Our bodies are present in the here and now. It's the only part of us that are present. So you started listening to, you're tuning in, you're calling it a her, and then as you called her a her, and she started, her ears perked up, and so you developed this communication with her. Is that right?
Yes, and I realized I don't own her. She's a privilege to have, it's a privilege to spend my life with her, and I don't want to have an abusive relationship with her. I don't want to have a neglectful relationship with her. I want to have a respectful, loving, kind relationship with her. And started listening. And what, to my shock and surprise, when I said, okay, body, okay, animal, what do you want? What do you want to eat? And really sunk into that. To my shock and surprise, she said, I'd like some salmon, I'd like some vegetables, and some brown rice. And I was like, oh, no kidding. I was sure it was going to be cookies, sugar, chocolate.
Yeah,
that wasn't for her.
Yeah.
So I came with a new awareness about the deeper desire. So I realized that if I neglected my body's desires altogether, then she would take whatever she could get.
Right.
But if I listened more deeply, what she really wanted were wholesome things. A good night's sleep. Right. Please take me to yoga. And the more and more I listened, the more the healthy choices, it became a gift. I'm going to give it to her. Out of love rather than, well, you know, she owes me, it owes me, my body's failing me, this anger, all this anger and resent just melted away, and suddenly there was compassion for this living creature that I'd been so cruel to.
And you developed a relationship where before it was an object you were pushing around, pulling around, like it could have been a piece of luggage, you know.
Exactly.
But now all of a sudden you have a relationship.
Exactly, John. That's
it. I love it. I get it. I totally get it. I even talk about in my book how that was sort of a turning point for me, is how I had to start listening to my body and how my body started talking to me. I didn't use that specific language structure repositioning that you did, but it's I'm using it as we speak in my head. I'm creating a whole new connection with my body, so I think that's really powerful. So let's talk about this pleasurable weight loss. What does that mean, and what are some of the key components to pleasurable weight loss?
It starts with the foundation that the body's an animal. And why I like the metaphor of the animal, you know, think of a puppy or a dog. Dogs, they just love their owners. And they're so willing to please and serve. And what you'll find is when you come into relationship with your body, even if you've been resentful and criticized your body all your life, he or she is so willing to forgive you and go, oh, you were mean to me, but it's okay. I know you love me and just wants to be in sync with you.
Very powerful.
And
And if you look at the imagery like of a dog is endlessly loyal.
Yes.
You know, and I think our bodies are like that too. I mean, if you think about how distant we are from what our bodies really need in terms of, you know, being indoors all the time, so not getting natural light and being around natural energies and eating dead foods and taking drugs and pills and medications. If you think about how removed we are from what our bodies really need and how we do abuse them and how they keep functioning somehow. You know, there's so many toxins in our bodies, and if we really, really understood how many toxins were, understood the real problems with digesting modern foods, you don't wonder how on earth are we surviving.
I know.
And I think the reason we are, just like you say, is because we have these bodies that are just endlessly loyal, that are just going to, no matter what we do, they're just going to keep functioning.
Yes. They will do their best, and they will give us warning signs, and that's what weight is. Weight is your body's cry for attention, cry for help.
Yeah.
It's tried to let you know in subtler ways, hey, it's not working for me. You didn't notice the bloating. You didn't notice the constipation. You didn't notice the rash. All right, here, try 20 pounds. You know, try 200
right.
pounds in your case. Are you going to notice right. now? Hello, I'm here.
Sometimes it takes 200 pounds for some of us, yeah.
Sometimes it does.
But for me, in any case, it took that. But, you start by seeing your body as an animal, as a loyal, faithful animal. And then where do you go from there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that animal wants to serve your mind and your mind's desires, which are many. My mind loves reading books and being on the internet and talking and this and that. What does your body love and need? Some pretty basic things. Some sleep, good food, water, shelter, just only a few fundamentals. But one thing that links all of those things that the body needs is pleasure. All organisms, ourselves included, but right down to the single-cell amoeba, have the instinct to move towards pleasure and away from pain.
Yeah.
So in the case of an amoeba bumps into something painful and registers that as danger, threat of, you know, life at threat, get away,
yeah.
And there's a repulsive energy, which is just get away in any direction as fast as possible. The same
right.
amoeba bumps into something pleasurable and goes, ooh, safety, promise of life. I'm going to go in this direction. And it oozes very intuitively into the pleasure in just the right way. So using that compass away from pain towards pleasure, we've evolved all through time from the amoeba to be the human beings that we are today. Again, still animals, now with this developed mind. And the mind, this is where the conflict comes in, John. The mind has been conditioned and culturated to have all kinds of moralistic attitudes towards pleasure. Oh, pleasure, you can only have that if you earn it. Pleasure is frivolous. Pleasure is sinful. Pleasure is this. Pleasure is that. All is bad PR for a portal of pleasure, which your body all along is like, are you sure? That's been my compass, my whole existence, and my whole ancestry. I think you're wrong. But again, being the loyal servant, the body will go along with it. But because it's such a strong need and impulse, it can't be pushed underground for too long. So if your body neglects pleasure all day, if your mind neglects pleasure all day, at a certain point your body goes, all right, she's tired now. Let's dive for the cookies. She doesn't have the energy to hold me back.
Right. So I was just about to ask this because I know a lot of people are listening right now and they're going to ask the same question. So, you know, people see cookies, ice cream, alcohol, whatever, as pleasure. But clearly that's not good for the body, and that's not what the body really, really wants. So where's that
yes.
coming from?
Okay. Basically, if you deprive someone of what they need,
yeah.
they will be in this scarcity state. Well, they'll just grab for whatever they can get without discrimination.
Yeah.
So when your body goes compulsively for the cookies, the alcohol, the junk, it's coming from that place of this extreme pleasure deficiency.
Okay.
Imagine you're sitting there at home at night and the cravings come on. Let's just imagine someone was rubbing your feet. What would you choose, the foot rub or the cookies? The foot rub.
Right.
Someone's nibbling your ear, someone you adore.
Yeah.
We would all choose the higher pleasure if we had the choice, but if that's all there is, then the body will take what it can get.
That makes sense. So on a practical basis, how do you implement this pleasure so that people can start giving the body those pleasures, so their body's not going to be craving other pleasures. And indeed, is that what happens when you do start giving your body the more fundamental pleasures? Then they stop craving the other pleasures. Is that the more addictive ones? Is that the idea?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how does that work on a fundamental level? Like, what are some of the steps that people take toward creating that pleasure for themselves?
To begin that, we define what I call true pleasure from counterfeit pleasure or pseudo-pleasure.
Right.
John, true pleasure answers yes to the question, does this give me pleasure now, in an hour, in a day, in a week,
yeah.
in a month, in a year?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it's yes, yes, yes all the way, which this conversation with you would be in that category, a year from now I'll look back and go, gee, we had a good time. No, that was good pleasure. Let's say you and I were sitting out in the park right now and having a nice piece of chocolate cake. We were present. We were breathing. We were just eating. You know, we were sharing. It was an experience together. It was of a quality that we would approve of. That would be in the same category.
Yeah.
Counterfeit pleasure, pseudo pleasure, at a certain point doesn't. You know, that glass of wine was great right now, but I had a hangover the next day.
Right.
That chocolate cake gave me a headache an hour later.
Right. I look at it
break
the
out
same
a week
way.
Later.
Yeah, I kind of look at it in terms of anything that feels good and gives you energy now and in the future is something that's good for you. Anything that feels good but lowers your energy in the future is an addiction. That's sort of that's my definition. My definition says something that you want to do that you can't help, it feels good, but then it's going to make you sick or lower your energy, then it's an addiction. Does that make
sense? Exactly. Same thing.
Yeah. So you learn how to differentiate the two. And then so when you're having an urge, an impulse, basically, I'm trying to say, when you have an urge or an impulse, then basically you ask that question. Is that the idea?
You ask that question.
Right.
And then you try to reach for the highest pleasure possible in the moment. So there's one way, which is you're backed into a corner and how do I make the best choice? You know, we can work with that situation, but, you know, better yet is to work preventatively where you can not be in that desperate situation and nourish your body in advance.
Mm-hmm.
But John, I have a particular practice I call it the pleasurable eating practices. Would you like me to share those?
Yes, please.
Okay. So the first one is, there's four of them, is you're sitting down to eat, and I do recommend you sit down, and you remember, I'm eating with my animal. I'm eating with her. So John, imagine you are eating dinner with your sweetie, your love, and there she is, and you're not even making eye contact, you're just ignoring her, you're just...
Yeah.
It's almost like she's not there. I mean, you wouldn't do that. You're a gentleman.
This is really good. I love it. This is really good. Yeah, I get you. Okay.
So that's the way I want you to be present with your animal. He's there with you. She's there with you. It's the two of you together having this meal. And to have some manners about it. Okay, all right, buddy, are you comfortable? Often we sit on the chair all crooked and off to the side and not in a good posture. That's not comfortable for her. Help her, get comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, she. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. It's a typical neglected relationship. You know, if you look at the analogy of a dog or a cat. You know, a dog that's just been beaten and neglected, it's going to be angry. It's going to be miserable. It's going to have low energy. It's going to do the least amount of things that it can do to get by, and it's going to stay away from. And it's going to be in this constant state of stress where it just wants to avoid pain and doesn't want to think about anything else. Versus an animal that you're petting and cuddling and treating nice and taking for walks and playing with and taking care of needs and looking after how they're happy and joyful and want to please you and have extra energy and joy. It's the exact same relationship. I can see that really clearly because I've been on both sides of the tracks and I know what it's like to have a body that just is exhausted and doing the bare minimum and just trying to get by and feeling totally neglected and totally abused, and then the other side of having a body that's just full of energy, joy, and life. And I think you really nailed it on this one thing really well, that it's the relationship. And the way to make this happen, to make that change happen, is to be conscious of that relationship and to rekindle it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
A little bit of compassion goes a long way.
Okay, so that's principle one, is it?
Step one in the pleasurable eating practices is acknowledge you're there with your animal, you're eating together. What does he want? What does he want to eat?
Yeah.
And you may be surprised that it's not what your mind wants. And so then step two is to relax and to do that by breathing. So I live in New York, John, so I say for the New Yorkers, they get off at 3. Anyone else, I recommend 5 or 10. Deep breaths, and by deep I mean the belly breaths that go right down to the bottom of your belly that deeply relax you, as opposed to the upper chest breath, which is more of a survival, still keeping you in stress breath.
Yeah.
And this does a couple of really important things. A, it oxygenates the system. And if you have a fire, if you want to light a fire, you need wood, you need matches, and you need oxygen. There's no fire without the oxygen. Similarly, for your digestive fire, that if it burns efficiently, it's going to give you fat burning. If it burns poorly, like a sooty, clogged up fireplace, is going to cause fat storage, or at least not help you lose weight. The food is the wood. Your stomach itself, your digestion, is the matches, and oxygen is your breath. If you don't breathe deeply while you're eating, you're slowing down the whole system, and you're the opposite of optimizing your digestion and your fat burning capability. So breath is a crucial ingredient. Also, what breathing does is relaxes you. Now, John, what most people do is they eat to get relaxed. They start stressed, especially if they're trying to lose weight. Oh, no, food. I might eat the wrong thing. I might eat too much.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I didn't have to eat at all. This is a pain.
Yeah.
And eventually they eat and eat and eat, and by necessity the body makes them relax, because it's when we're relaxed that we digest. What I'm asking is that people, that you make the effort to relax first, and then your digestion will be optimized from the beginning. And the metaphor back to relationship would be, let's say you're going to make love. You can come, and you can come stressed, and okay, having sex, and eventually have an orgasm, and relaxed. But what if prior to your sexual encounter, you did some meditation, did some yoga, had a massage, and then came to the lovemaking? It would be from the outset on a whole other plane, and that's what's happening digestively, this magic, when you take the time to breathe and relax before you eat, and then intermittently put the fork down, take some more breaths, relax, and keep eating. Make it a sensuous, pleasurable experience.
Again, a very powerful experience, because most of the time when we're eating, we're totally unconscious, and we're just shoveling food down, and especially when our body's in this deprivation mode, we're just shoveling food, and by the time we know it, our stomach's totally stuffed, and that's the end of it, and we feel sick. And to get conscious first totally changes the eating experience, because then you're eating slower, you're eating with awareness, you're making good choices, you're nourishing your body rather than just stuffing your stomach. So I got to say, on that one, you nailed it too. I agree with that very much. That makes a lot of sense.
Thank you. So continuing with
the
sex metaphor in a way, the
okay.
next step, step three, is to seek pleasure in every bite. And, John, this is where we've really been shortchanged culturally. Because we haven't been given the proper education about pleasure, and people confuse pleasure and addiction. Again, addiction is that pseudo-pleasure, that counterfeit pleasure. But we've been robbed of a true understanding of pleasure, so we have it all bundled together, and of course we're scared of pleasure. The true pleasure, and this is a Jeanine Roth quote that I love, she says, "Pleasure, it's when pleasure ends that overeating begins."
Yeah.
And we think we're getting pleasure by overeating, but really, our stomach has started to hurt, the headache has come, we're having symptoms. As soon as we have overeaten a bite, as you said, the energy starts to go down, the pleasure, the satisfaction, just the good feeling becomes less.
Yeah.
So when you eat for pleasure, what that means is you've got to be present. You can't have pleasure if you're checked out. It'd be like if I call you up, John, or let's imagine we're in the same room, and I've got something on my mind. I want to pour my heart out and have your human companionship. But you're not present. You're looking out the window, you're checking your text messages, doing a Facebook update, and I would walk away going, well, I didn't get what I needed. I need to speak to another friend.
Yeah. As you're saying this, I'm just reminded of a movie I just saw on the airplane. I think it was called A Question for Ben or something like that, about this young 20-something Australian executive, high-powered, living an exciting life, and by all standards a great life, but he's feeling very unsatisfied. And he's got lots of mates, you know, and they travel all over the world, and they do this, and they do that, and they go to this bar and that bar. And he's trying to communicate his feelings of dissatisfaction. And nobody he talks to can be present for his conversation. You know, he tries to talk to his dad, and his dad's like, it's like another language. He talks to his best friend, and his best friend falls asleep right there on the spot as he's talking. And all through the movie, all he wants to do is have someone be present to connect with his feelings. And he has no support system for that, because his whole life, all he's done is just run around with people but never really be present with them.
Mm-hmm.
So same thing with your body.
It's a great story. Your body, yeah. If you're not smelling the food, feeling the food, tasting the food, seeing the food, you can eat massive quantities, and your body says, I didn't see anything, didn't smell anything, yeah. Didn't feel anything. I mustn't have eaten anything. I'm still hungry.
Yeah.
And John, this is the crazy part, is that your body actually generates more hormones for appetite to make you hungry so that you eat more, so that you have a chance to have the pleasure again. And then if you again check out, it will say, well, still mustn't have eaten a lot, better eat more. Versus if you show up and be present and taste it and savor it and, you know, do the socially unacceptable thing of actually slowing down and being with your food and enjoying it, then this other biochemistry kicks in, which is where we have cholecystokinin, CCK, another hormonal pathway that stimulates digestion, it stimulates pleasure, and satiety. Body's saying, that's enough. I'm full. I'm done. Thank you.
Yeah. Going back to your lovemaking analogy, which I think is a really good one, is that, you know, typically we're also very unfulfilled there, too, because the typical lovemaking session might be between two people that aren't present. It's just like a race to the finish line, you know, to try to get to some sort of goal. And then you're left feeling like, well, what happened? And then you go off and do whatever, and you're just feeling like you're wanting more of something, because you're not getting what you want, and what you really wanted was some presence. You wanted presence, attention, cuddles, interaction. That's what, you know, the connection. That's what you really want. I think our bodies are wanting that too. And you know what else? And as I'm thinking about this, if you've got a relationship with your body where it's desiring a connection with you, food is just the most natural thing, because food is a form of connection. I mean, you're taking something outside of you and you're bringing it inside of your body. It's becoming you. I mean, that to me is connection in its most literal sense. So food really is, in a lot of ways, is about connection. And so it kind of makes sense to me that if your body's feeling like it wants to connect with you, you know, it wants to have a relationship with you, and it's not, the only way it's going to connect, the way it's going to keep trying, is through food, because at least there's some, even if it's unconscious and unsatisfied, there's some interaction there, and there's some connection with the outside going in. So learning how to connect with yourself in the same way as if you were in a relationship and you learned how to connect with your partner, it satisfies you. It rings the bell. It hits the spot, and then you can walk away feeling satisfied instead of looking for something else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
You got it.
And I'm just learning as you're saying this, but it's all resonating with me. All right, I'm ready for number four.
Okay. Number four is called eating to the point of energy. Mm-hmm. So in pleasurable weight loss, we see the value of numbers and measuring, and it's good to have a sensible grasp of that. But the trap with dieting is that you delegate your intuition and your feeling sense, your feeling intelligence, for this tick box, you know, did I hit the number? And numbers are not the language of the body. They are not the language of your feeling, breathing, wise animal.
Yeah.
And the sensation is. And your body feels what's right. So eating to the point of energy, I teach when you start eating, you'll have low energy, and that's natural. That's the signal, time to put some fuel in, some... You know, that's we're hungry with a good reason. We need to eat. And as you start eating, you'll notice your energy goes up and up and up. And when you've eaten one bite too many, it will start to go down.
Yeah.
And John, I used to eat myself all the way into a food coma every single time.
Right.
And I would complain to my friends, food makes me so tired. And that's because I was checked out and I was eating way too much. So that requires being present with every bite.
That's really what I'm hearing is they're all on the same theme of being present with with this part of you, this relationship with this animal, and being present with it is the common denominator in all of these things. And all of them, and I'm just curious because they're all really good, and in a sense they're all very much holistic. But those principles are all centered around eating. Do you have other things that you do that are holistic, that in terms of developing and cultivating this relationship, that are not necessarily centered around food and eating patterns?
Yes, developing the muscle of knowing and investigating your desires.
Okay.
I grew up terrified of my desires, John.
Okay.
As a teenager, we become sexual creatures, but you're not. That's not what good girls do. So then it's this, that's the first, one of the really strong conflicts. Oh, desire is dangerous. Let's push those underground as much as possible. And then it becomes pervasive. Then we push our true desire for the healthy food gets bundled up and pushed down.
Right.
And until we honor and investigate our true desires, we're going to be racked with compulsions. So I ask the question, what do you really want? What's your desire? And I define desire as sort of the net between all our small wants. So there might be part of you, I want to lose weight and be healthy, but I want to eat the cookie. And they feel in contradiction. And desire, when you truly investigate it, which one is stronger? Which one is deeper? Which one is more powerful? The desire to be healthy and to be free and to love your body will be the stronger one. So that will end up having the net pull.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't take the time to go deeply in and feel and investigate, the I want the cookie one may be louder and may seem like it's the bigger one. So there's a certain depth that comes over time from practicing this, and you can write a desire list, what do I want? And there's many things that you want. The things that we are most told we shouldn't want are the sensual things. So sensuality, though, is completely natural to the body. It just means experiencing your senses, as innocent as could be, has some shame around it. Oh, sensuality. What do you think people often fear about sensuality?
Yeah, well, there's a lot. There's a lot of layers to it. I mean, first is a feeling of guilt that it's been driven into us that it's wrong, and there's also an inhibition between just allowing yourself to feel good. It's like this feeling of are you worthy? There's a feeling of deservingness and worthiness, and some people don't even want to allow themselves or give themselves that because they have so many judgments about themselves, that they don't like themselves, they don't feel worthy enough to give themselves something that's pleasurable. So there's many different layers to that inhibition.
Mm-hmm. And that's why thinking of your body as an animal, as another, is really useful. Because you can say to the mind, okay, mind, maybe you think you don't deserve it, but this creature is giving you life every single day.
You never say, my dog doesn't deserve to go to the park. You would never say that.
Exactly.
Right.
My daughter doesn't deserve to have a good night's sleep.
Yeah,
she's got to work.
Yeah.
That's the
exactly.
beauty of this model of the body as another.
It's so powerful. And I just, I've sort of had it instinctively over the last 10 years. And it's been growing. But just the repositioning of looking at it that way and calling it by another name like that, I feel like I've just in this conversation have gained a richness in my understanding of that. And I'm actually going to go back and listen to this conversation again because I feel like I'm getting a lot out of this. But my next question, and this is my most important question to you, Jenna, is why on earth is this specifically just for women?
Ah, okay. Well, it's not.
Good.
Yes, no, this is universal, it's human. My particular focus has been, up until now, working with women. For years, I've worked with men and women, to be honest. My clients are a mixture of men and women, and just because it creates a certain safety for women to be able to explore their desires in the company of other women.
That makes sense. Yeah, but I can tell you as a man, you know, having a men's group would be incredibly, incredibly useful. Like I was saying about this guy, you know, in this movie, go rent this movie, Ask Ben, I think it's called, something like that. You know, guys have no way to communicate, even with their friends. They're not in their relationship. They're not communicating anywhere. So even forgetting about communicating with the body. So learning how to communicate with your body, to learn how to communicate with everyone, and it's going to change a lot of lives. So anyway, that's just if you get around to it, I would highly suggest, as a man.
I'll make a personal commitment to you, John.
Okay, well, you don't have to make it to
but
me.
I will. I won't do it today, but I will get that. Get that going.
Okay.
And you're reminding me one of my friends teaches about sensuality, and she's doing a live program in Hawaii for women. And one of my male friends said, "Oh, I'm so jealous. I wish I was a woman. Yeah. I wish I could go on that program to study pleasure and sensuality." He's like, "That's not being offered for the guys." And it really brought to the surface that level of oppression that's there, that I totally get
the importance of having women in a group where they can feel safe. You put one man in there and it changes the whole conversation. So I get that. But having a men's group and a women's group would definitely be something worthwhile. So I want to know, like, so just getting started, we talk about these different things, but if you could just give us one thing that we can do to start experiencing pleasurable weight loss in this connection. Just one thing. When people are done with this conversation, they're going to go do this one thing. What would you say that would be?
All right. Well, this one's counterintuitive, but I've noticed over the years that, you know, why do we want to lose weight? Well, again and again, it comes up, whether you're a man or a woman, you want to be sexy. Of course you do.
Okay.
That's natural. And the idea is, all right, I'm going to lose weight, and then I'm going to be sexy. But what happens is you lose the weight, you're looking sexy, and suddenly all this attention is coming towards you. And it can be overwhelming. It can be frightening, especially if, as many women, but also many boys, you know, men when they were younger, we've experienced sexual inappropriate moments. Sexual assault, molestation, it's rampant.
It's a huge issue when it comes to weight loss. Huge issue.
Mm-hmm. So if you've experienced that as a child, as a young adult, and you found, oh, if I gain some weight, I think I'm deflecting that. I'm not going to get as much attention.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get as much heat. Then even if your conscious mind is not involved, it's your animal's way of protecting yourself.
Absolutely. I talk a lot about it. This is one of my biggest topics, there's no question. I even have a term for it. I call it emotional obesity, which is the need to be fat in order to feel safe. Weight becomes a safety mechanism. It protects us from the outside world. And I was talking to a doctor in Los Angeles a couple of days ago who specializes in childhood obesity, and she says that 70% of all abuse victims are obese.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 70%.
And that was my story, John. In my teens, I was sexually assaulted, and it was, I definitely noticed, okay, this is buffering me, this is protecting me. And so I teach that until sexy is safe, you'll never lose weight.
We have to feel safe
being sexy first. So how do you get to that place?
Only because I have a lot of strategies. I deal with that all the time. I do this visualization where his angel wings are protecting his column of light. I do all kinds of things to we do the cellular release therapy. I do all kinds of different things to reprogram that association that the weight is making you feel safe. So I'm just curious what your take on that is in your experience.
Mm-hmm. Happy to. For me, there's two most important concepts for starting to make sexy safe. And the first one is erotic innocence. Now, John, erotic innocence is this idea that before the mind had time to jump in and label this right or wrong, there was this innocence. There was this erotic innocence that's been in all of us since we were born. A friend of mine was changing the diaper of a friend of her son, and he was just a little infant, 6 months old. And there he was, wriggling away, his hands above his head, slowly brought his hands down by his side and pointed to his penis, giggling and smiling and laughing. That's erotic innocence.
You realize, of course, this kid's going to be listening to this conversation 20 years from now. He's going to be very upset at you.
I don't think
he's not going to talk to you for
starved this anecdote.
Yeah. No names, please.
No names.
Yeah.
And that's erotic innocence. It's just it's the instinct towards the sensual, towards the erotic. This is not an invitation for child molestation. This is not an invitation for adults to put their sexual agenda onto children. It's just a matter of realizing that children have a natural curiosity towards feeling good and feeling sensual and sexual.
Yeah.
And it matures over time. And, you know, if there were no abusers out there, it would just come out as a healthy expression. So now, as adults, even if we have had wounding, we can still get in touch with that part of ourselves that is innocent, that loves to feel sensual, that loves to feel sexual, and we can give that stage time in our life. We can give it the microphone, as I say, metaphorically. If you give someone a microphone, it's because you want to hear them. You want to amplify their voice. So allow that part of you to be expressed. Now, the paradigm people get into, like you're saying, I don't deserve it, is, oh, I'm overweight. I don't deserve to be sexy. I'm overweight. I'm not sexy. You know, when I lose weight, I will be.
Yeah.
But that energy is already there. And unless you start to get safe with it now, unless you start to realize it's safe, it's sacred, it's a contribution. If you walk into a party, no matter what size you are, and you've got your sexy on, and I'm not meaning you're necessarily macking on people or overtly, you know, trying to put your sexual energy onto someone. You're just dancing in it. You're just living and breathing it in innocence. Again, not with an agenda, not with a power over, I'm so sexy, I'm going to get you. No, just, this is my life energy. That's what sexual energy is. It's creative energy. It's life energy. It's as innocent as, you know, the birds and the bees, but literally, just life itself buzzing around feeling good.
Your experience when people get in touch with this erotic innocence, that it helps them feel that sexy is safe. Is that correct? What's interesting about that is it falls in line with your pleasurable weight loss. But for me, you know, in dealing with this, and this is an issue I deal with every single day of the year, whenever I'm talking to people, we don't do it through pleasure or through acknowledging the pleasure. We just do it through lots of different ways of making you feel safe and giving you surrogates for the weight. But you're just diving into the pleasure, even if there's pain and abuse and trauma, you're just still diving into the pleasure and say, let's reconnect with that pleasure. And I don't know if it's true, but if you're telling me it's true, it's pretty incredible that if by doing that, you're able to feel safe being sexy, that's awesome. I mean, that's an incredible way to approach it. So I'd love to learn more about that one. I think that's really amazing.
So once you have that, you're going to get the attention. And when the attention comes, you need two things in hand. One, you need to realize that attention creates sensation. Again, if I was alone in my room here, I would feel a certain way. Let's say you walked in the door and you looked at me, I would feel something. I would feel a certain sensation just by the fact that your attention is on me and vice versa.
Yeah.
Now, often that sensation gets associated with fear and trauma where it's actually just sensation. So when you can start to break it down and go, okay, I felt a tingle in my nose. I felt a stirring in my belly. I felt a tightness in my shoulder. It takes away the power from, oh, this is a bad thing that's going to hurt me, to no, that was just a sensation.
Well, if you're doing that and it works, I love that approach. Again, it's a really, you're keeping the focus on the joy and the consciousness rather than the trauma. So I think that's very powerful. It's really, it's revolutionary. If it works, and I guess you've been doing this for a long time, so I have to assume you're getting success with it. So I think that's pretty phenomenal.
Thank you.
That's something that I'm going to explore. So, okay. So, I guess as much as I don't want to, we're going to have to wrap it up pretty soon. And I just want to know, so what's next for you? What's coming up? In your projects? What are you involved
in? Let me just give you one little thing on the erotic innocence. The last thing
is
the tool to have in hand is crucial. It's called the intimate decline. And the intimate decline is your power to say no. So one of the reasons that we gain the weight is it's a tacit way of saying no. Don't even come near me.
You're absolutely right.
So now you're sexy. Now you're welcoming attention. You need to always have that no in your pocket. And particularly as women, you can tell me if men have this too. There's this feeling, I don't want to hurt their feelings by saying no. I don't want to reject them. I don't want to be the source of pain. So I would rather just never get the attention in the first place so I don't have to go through the process of saying no.
There's lots of reasons why we don't say no, as a man or a woman. We don't say no because we don't want to hurt somebody. We don't say no. We don't want to say no because we're afraid that someone won't like us, someone won't love us. There's so many reasons. We'll lose a job. We won't be popular. There's just so many different reasons why we don't want to say no, and learning how to say no in relationships that you care about, such as work relationships or personal relationships where you're afraid you're going to lose something. Learning how to say no comfortably is essential for weight loss because it gives you healthy boundaries. And if you don't have healthy boundaries, your body's going to use weight as a form of boundaries. It's like your body's using weight to define your boundaries. So learning how to say no is a really, I 100% agree with that. That's crucial.
So I call it the intimate decline, and it stems from Aikido, the martial art form.
Yeah.
And the intimate decline, what's intimate about it is it's got a yes in there as well. It says yes to your humanity, yes to your desire, yes to you, but no to this. Yes to you as a human, no to this is not what I want. So that's the intimate decline, and it's a powerful way of being able to be in your full glory out in the world, knowing that you're safe to do the intimate decline.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, Jen, I think you've got a lot to teach us. So where can we go to learn more about you and what you're doing?
Thank you, John. PleasurableWeightLoss.com is the hub for the Pleasurable Weight Loss movement. Mm-hmm. And there you can get some free videos. You can literally become part of this movement. And why I describe it as a movement is because it's going to take all of us to change these deeply entrenched ideas that your body's an object that you can own and abuse and it's your right to do it, and to resurface a reverence for the body, which I do believe has been there in the past, where we see your body as a he, as a she, as a living creature that is naturally inclined to pleasure, that has an intelligence about that pleasure, where it's not about compulsion or addiction. It's just about the perfect amount that keeps you in your sweet spot, energized, able to contribute to the planet, not in shame, not in guilt, aware and awake. And I invite all of you, now that you've heard these teachings on pleasure, next time you see someone who's neglecting pleasure, who's turning away from pleasure, who's denying their body, give them a little nudge and remind them of these teachings and let them know that there is another way, that following the compass of pleasure has an intelligence in it, that it's trustable, that their body really does love them, that she or he is this loyal dog that wants to serve them, and see if you can get them into another perspective. And in doing so, it will anchor it all the more into you and make you feel more powerful the next time you're faced with the possibility of turning away from your body and away from pleasure or embracing them.
Well, I just got to say that, you talk about it being a movement, and it is a movement. It's a movement because it's a paradigm shift and totally radical and revolutionary from anything else that's being done. So it definitely is a movement. And I would invite everyone that's listening, men and women, because I can tell you as a man I'm getting a lot out of this, to go to PleasurableWeightLoss.com and log on and become a member or get Jenna's emails and learn as much as you can about this, because I've been doing this for a long time now, and everything she's saying is really resonating with me. It's making a lot of sense. So I am going to listen to this conversation again, because there's a lot there for me. So I really, Jenna, I appreciate your time, and I think you've given us a lot that's really surprising, because it's revolutionary stuff. So keep up the great work. I really appreciate it.
A total delight to talk with you. I'm so happy that these ideas are falling on the fertile ground of your mind and your community. And everybody listening, thank you for your attention. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you, Jenna.